All right, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another News in Focus podcast. It's Thursday, and we have an article from Carl R. Truman. Truman is a, not an Anglican, he's a Reformed guy, but do we know what his denominational?
Was it Westminster?
Right, so that means he's Presbyterian.
Probably Presbyterian.
Okay, right. And the title is The U.S. Military, Transgenderism, and the Logic of Psychological Man. This ought to be a good article. All right, let's get started.
One of the standard techniques in political propaganda, left and right, is to present ideas or events as discrete units, to be taken in isolation and detached from any larger historical and philosophical narrative. This technique is useful for relativizing the significance of scandals. Thus, to faithful left, Clinton's emails are a minor aberration, as are Trump's comments about women to the faithful right. On a more sinister level, this technique is also a means of bringing about huge social change by making every hill seem so small that none can be worth dying on. Thus, for example, transgender bathroom policy is about nothing more than, well, who uses which bathroom? And people like Rod Dreher are therefore just reactionary cranks.
But do we know who that Rod guy is?
I'm not sure who he is.
Okay.
But transgenderism is not about who uses which loo. That question is...
Loo.
Okay. A little British there.
Loo. Okay. I'm learning something. And I thought it was a typo. All right.
That question is the trivial point of a very long and sharp spear, useful for belittling the concerns of those who believe that there is a profound connection between biology and gender. Transgenderism is set to change everything. Our understanding of sex, of identity, of relationships, of the significance of the body. And it does this because it demands a revised metaphysics of personhood, a project with profound and comprehensive social and political implications. School bathroom policy is a good example. It has already prioritized government rights over those of parents. There's the rub. Another example is provided by a document buried deep on the Department of Defense's website, Transgender Service in the U.S. Military and Implementation Handbook. Psychological man and woman and gender nonconforming, Uncle Sam needs you. The handbook opens with the axiomatic distinction between biological sex and gender, page 9. I say axiomatic because the handbook presents the distinction as inarguable, reflecting the current political climate in which to have a dissenting opinion on this point, or even to ask for some form of justification of the axiom, is outlawed, on both intellectual and moral grounds.
Right, so this is a scenario where this is army policy.
Yeah.
Department of Defense has decided that gender and sex are not the same. Done.
Yeah, they've taken up the narrative that is out there in the culture and...
And made it policy.
Yes, exactly.
So to have a dissenting opinion is to be in violation of army policy.
Yeah.
Right. And what Truman really is saying is there's never any public dialogue about those things. Mm-hmm. They're just accepted. And if you disagree with that, then you're just a bigot, a racist, or fill in the blank.
Or at best, you're just making a big deal out of nothing.
Yeah.
You know, your view is trivialized.
So there's no discussion or dialogue. It just turns to name calling. And frankly, both Clinton and Trump both did that. So we just saw this great example of how that works out in the media.
Yeah, his example is a good one in the sense, you know, that every liberal was saying they're just emails. What's the big deal? Not really taking into consideration the idea of national security.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, on the other side, you know, Trump saying these things, well, you know, it was a long time ago, and it, you know, taken out of context, and da, 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 instead of really looking at, okay, what he said were horrible things. You know, might be reflective of a personality that isn't fit to lead, perhaps. You know, whatever the honest conversation is going to be, it's just brushed under the rug by both sides.
And this and the bigger narrative is something that can be discussed, but in the Department of Defense, you can't have a conversation because the policy has already been set. Mm-hmm. And this becomes very problematic for chaplains, Christian officers. You know, you now have to be very careful as to how you answer this question. You can say the Bible says, so that you divorce yourself from the Bible and make it an objective third party, and then army policy is, and then you kind of walk away from it, letting the person... But you can't say, I disagree. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not acceptable because you sign up to follow policy.
Yeah.
Whoever thought that we'd be here?
Right.
So, in fact, the distinction rests upon a highly questionable...
That's a great word. I've never seen it before.
Wow.
Concatenation.
Concatenation. Wow. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah.
Concatenation of social theories, political postures, logical fallacies, and psychological assumptions, and a comprehensive rejection of historical social practices. For example, that male and female roles do look different in different societies does not logically entail that there is no connection between biology and the range of socially constructed gender roles different societies represent. Indeed, the preponderance of historical evidence points to precisely the opposite conclusion. The document makes interesting reading. It indicates just how contorted the military's rules and regulations have become in order to deny the reality that men and women are biologically different in a way that determines their suitability for certain tasks. For example, take the hypothetical case of Lieutenant Marty, pages 50 and 51. Lieutenant Marty changed his gender marker in the service personnel data system from female to male after completing an approved transition plan. Lieutenant Marty has not had sex reassignment surgery as part of the transition plan and is working with his MMP on a plan to start a family. Lieutenant Marty approached his commanding officer a few weeks ago and mentioned he was pregnant. The document gives advice to Marty and to the commanding officer. The strangest instruction is surely this. Even though Lieutenant Marty has maintained female anatomy, he must be screened for pregnancy prior to deployment. If Lieutenant Marty became pregnant on deployment, he will be transferred in accordance with service policy. Notice that, even though Lieutenant Marty has maintained female anatomy, he should be screened for pregnancy before being deployed. Perhaps it is a typo, but as it stands, in an official government document, it is simply bizarre. Okay, she or he is still really a woman, but she or he might actually be pregnant, as he claims. Setting that aside, here's the thing. If we are ultimately to make no distinction between genders, then the Kantian imperatives of our contemporary political culture mean that we must ultimately start screening all soldiers, male and female, for pregnancy. For to require those with a female anatomy to undergo such would seem to me to be a sign of sexism, transphobia, etc.
All right, what is this Kantian? What does he mean there?
Immanuel Kant, yeah, the philosopher Kant. He's just making a reference to that.
This is bizarre.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it.
And I think it's great because it shows how ridiculous their direction, glide path is. It's going to paint them into these really difficult and bizarre corners that hopefully the logical mind will say, no, this isn't going to work.
Well, remember, it's gotten into the Obamacare stuff, too, because, you know, women that are over 60 and men have to pay for maternity coverage even though they can never possibly get pregnant.
Yeah.
Because we have to make it equal across the board.
Yeah, it's insanity. One of the things that I was either reading or discussing or heard from somebody about 2 weeks ago with this particular topic is one of the reasons why the Army is attempting, or the Department of Defense is attempting, to break down these gender distinctions or biological sex distinctions, to have more women in various services, to allow them into the infantry, etc., is because the pool of eligible applicants as soldiers in the male gender has become so small. Recruiters presently estimate, based on body fat standards, high school graduation, drug use, felony convictions, that of the males between the age of 18 and 25, only about 20% are eligible to be inducted into the service. So if I'm a recruiter, 4 out of 5 of the males that I run into are just unqualified.
Ineligible, yeah.
Right. 4 out of 5. Talk about fishing in a pool, a pond in which 80% of the fish can't be caught. Mm-hmm. You know, who wants to fish in that kind of a pond? And so the application on the females is not near as narrow. So every time I open a career field up to females, I don't need as many males. And so that's one of the things that's driving all this in a very pragmatic way.
Once again, very illogical, because you're here to tell me that these males don't measure up to the standard, but because we have a lower standard for females, they do measure up. You know that if you put out the same task, it's going to be, you know, it probably would have been better for you to get one of those males that didn't qualify to do it. I mean, to drag something heavy or I mean, it's just ridiculous that we've gone down this path of denying the physical difference between male and female.
How sexist and misogynist of you to say so.
Yeah, the Marine Corps is not. The Marine Corps is fighting this very, very hard. And it's interesting because Trump's potential selection for Secretary of Defense is a former Marine. Right.
And when you see a job application and it says something like, you know, facilities director or whatever, or construction, it says must be able to lift 75 pounds on a regular basis.
We only said 50.
You know? Nobody almost questioned. Well, I understand why we have to do that, because, you know, we're constantly, you know, a delivery person, you know. It makes no sense. It's very illogical.
All right, let's finish up the
article. So you say it will never happen, but this logic has already prevailed in other areas. My son had to be screened for sickle cell anemia when he ran track at college, even though it was patently obvious that he was not in any remote danger of having it. Why then did he have to have the test? Because, as his coach told him, it would be racist to require the test from those who might actually have the disease. I still remember the comment the doctor appended to the results. The requirement for this test is a ridiculous waste of finite medical resources for which his college should take full moral responsibility. When it comes to the politics of identity, biology already takes a back seat to the aesthetics of the day.
All right, that's probably the best comment in the entire article right there. The requirement for this test is a ridiculous waste of finite medical resources for which his college should take full moral responsibility. There are so many things in that one sentence worthy of unpacking.
Yes.
The current government is not concerned about waste. That is just the bottom line. There is no concern for waste whatsoever. In fact, nothing is deemed ridiculous. In fact, to deem something ridiculous is such an absolute truth that you're intolerant in deeming something ridiculous, so you cannot identify anything as being ridiculous, and nothing's finite.
Mm-hmm. Every time I hear about these stupid moths that are on the firing range, or butterflies, or whatever they are, and the amount of money that they're putting towards making sure this moth doesn't disappear from the planet, who cares? I mean, that's what I just want to say. It's unbelievably ridiculous when you think about it.
But we don't operate with the idea that things can be wasted. We don't operate with the perspective that we have finite resources, and any of the government levels. And because we don't operate like there's such thing called finite resources, we are just doing that which is ridiculous. And then finally, the idea of taking full moral responsibility. What is moral?
Yeah, there's no moral standard.
Right, so exactly.
Who decides what that is?
According to whom?
Yeah.
According to your archaic Mosaic law? Yeah. According to what?
Yeah, you've thrown out absolute truth. There is no standard, and so morality just... You know, it's fluid. It's just like gender and sex. It's fluid.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what should I take responsibility for? The very idea of taking responsibility implies that there's a right and wrong to anything. And if there's no right and wrong, then you can't expect me to take responsibility. And thus the college has a white kid having a sickle cell anemia test.
Yeah. That I imagine is probably not cheap.
Right.
I don't know what it involves. But
is
it must
really
involve...
any lab work cheap? I mean...
No, obviously not, you know.
The thing that frustrates me the most about all this type of stuff is if the secularists really believed what they said they believed about evolution, they wouldn't need to stand up for the transgender person, because if they're fit, they'll survive. They don't need someone to come in and protect them.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if
it's
they're really...
anti-natural selection.
It absolutely is.
Yeah. Well, and that
excellent point.
Back, I think we lost that whole... We talked at the very first point about having a dialogue about these basic tenets. And I think, you know, we had the Scopes trial, and I think that really is the last time we ever had, like, a public dialogue about these things. I think it's just assumed from now on that if some scientist or somebody espousing the talking point says something, then it should be golden.
It's just truth.
Yes. I mean, if global warming, well, we scientists said it, so you need to accept it. I mean, just on and on and on. And so it's almost like we lost the battle since that point forward.
All right, let's wrap it up.
I have written on transgenderism before and received the response that as neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg. It should not be a concern to me. But I am concerned. Transgenderism rests upon a metaphysics of personhood that will attempt to rewrite all of society of social reality as we know it. Case in point, the Department of Defense's handbook. It represents the apotheosis of Philip Reeve's psychological man. We have now become whoever and whatever we happen to think we are, and the world needs to be remade in a manner that plays to our fantasies. Oh, and while we're at it, it does actually pick my pocket, and the convoluted government policies and their implementation are funded by my tax dollar. And while it may not directly break my leg, the bizarre culture of counterintuitive rules and convoluted asinine procedures it has inspired looks likely to hinder the efficient performance of those who are paid to protect my leg from being broken by others.
What an incredibly well-written short little article
He's
here.
He's a wordsmith.
Yeah. This last sentence in the second to last paragraph, we have now become whoever and whatever we happen to think we are, and the world needs to be remade in a manner that plays to our fantasies. You can't help but to wonder the degree to which young people who exist in a fantasy world through the internet want that remade every day in their lives.
Yeah.
Because they go somewhere in a basement, in a bonus room, and they exist in this make-believe world in which they construct villages, they construct farms, they think they accomplish stuff. They actually even talk about it with some legitimacy.
And I think it's the outcropping of the whole, I mean, when they start when they're kids. You start with Sesame Street. You can be anything you want to be. No, you can't.
Yeah.
No, you can't. Just dream big because, you know, don't let anybody tell you no. Then it moves on to Disney. Same message.
Put your mind to it and you can achieve it.
You know, and I think this is an outcropping also of feminism because it's the logical end to that because, just think how violently you get attacked if you say anything about feminism because, you know, you're supposed to tell women they can do anything. The reality is, no, you can't. But now we're moving into this area. Well, I just think that I'm a guy, so.
Yeah, I shared a funny picture on Facebook the other day that it was a kid's worksheet from elementary school that said, who do you want to be like when you grow up? And he said, I want to be like Michael Jordan. And then the second part said, well, what are you going to have to do to achieve that goal? And he said, be bigger, shave my head, and be black. You know? I mean, you can't just be who you want to be. You know, the example I always use is maybe I want to ride a horse and be a jockey in the Kentucky Derby. Well, my body type isn't going to allow me to do that. No matter how positively I think, nobody's going to hire me to ride a horse in the Kentucky Derby because we'll finish last. You know, you can't be everything that you want to be. I think that's a good point.
You just need a bigger horse to ride on.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
A much
but,
bigger horse.
I mean, could you imagine, I'm trying to think back, you know, could you imagine having a soldier that was a female that wants to identify as a male and then comes to you the next week and tells you that she's pregnant? Why is that a situation that we're having to deal with in the United States military? It's unbelievable that that's where we've gotten to.
Well, here's what this is my challenge to the listener. Go and look at the movies from the past 5 years and see how many of them have the message, especially animated cartoons, how many have this message? You can be whatever you want to be, buck the system, it's just out to make everybody robots and keep them oppressed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's everywhere. All right, thanks for listening. Have a great day.